Well, I'm going to go back to the past, not back to the future. We have borrowed Dr. Brown's DeLorean time machine, and if you were a child in the 80s, you'd know what that means. And it's taken you back to 2,000 years ago, a place called Laodicea. You're in a marketplace, and it's in modern-day Turkey. It's very hot there. It smells of stale sweat and spices. It's noisy. There are people and animals everywhere. There's men at the stalls shouting into the crowds. And you notice that they're selling all sorts of items. Eye cream to stop you going blind, herbal medicine for your ears, and a whole range of essential oils. There are tables laden with this beautiful black wool that everyone seems to want. The whole town is a hive of activity. There are banks with vaults full of gold. There are textile factories, and there is a world-famous medical school. You see, this town is well connected to all the big places. Ephesus, Smyrna, Sardis, you name them, they're all there, right there in the middle of the trade routes. The town's obviously done well for itself. The people look like they're rich people, if you know what I mean. But you look ahead and you see this building that could be a church. It's got a very imposing sort of pillars and these steps, and you're thinking about going up there. But before you ascend the steps, you see a young girl. She's probably like Libby's age, and she appears from the shadows. I'm going to call her Libby anyway. She looks a little nervous, and her clothes are very worn and torn. And she asks you if you're lost and if she can help you. It's then that you realise you are quite thirsty. So you say, oh, I'd like a drink, please. And she looks surprised, and then she laughs at you and says, you can't have a drink there. That water's going to make you sick. As she points at this aquifer. And she sort of looks at your expression and realises you're a foreigner. And then she says, you see, in Hierapolis in the north, there are these healing hot springs that are amazing for, you know, your aching muscles and bones. And you go there if you want to chill and relax. And it's just fantastic. And then in the south in Colossae, there's these ice-cold springs, and they're so clean and fresh, and everyone wants to drink from them. But you see, we're in the middle here, and this water, right, it's travelled 5 miles from the south and to reach here. And you see, our pipes aren't closed pipes. They're open. And I'll leave it to your imagination what might have contaminated those pipes. And it's kind of lukewarm, and it will make you sick if you drink it. So she says she'll take you back to the marketplace. And while you're haggling with this trader, because they're a bit extortionate over there, you feel this tug on your arm. Quick, hide. So you duck behind these barrels. The girl's sort of looking rather scared, and you just think, right, I'm going to keep quiet now. Then you see them. Roman soldiers, Emperor Domitian's men, massive muscles, armoured up, weapons at the ready, like actual gladiators, not the ones off the TV. They're knocking people over. They're pushing everyone out of the way. And then they're sort of grabbing at people's hands and heads. And then they're moving on, just leaving this chaos in their wake. And so once the soldiers have gone, the girl quietly explains to you what was happening. And she says something. She says she's a follower of the way. And then she realises, of course, you don't understand what that is. And she says, oh, well, some people have started calling us Christians. You know what that means, don't you? You know, Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and he used to live among us here, and he was crucified and died and was buried. And he rose again, and he's here now, and he's living in my heart, she says to you. This is what she tells you. Okay, right, I'm going to get my Chester scarf. Not that I'm very proud of them at the moment, but I'm going to pretend that I'm the girl now, so... She's talking to you. She says, life was bearable until Domitian became emperor in 81. He thinks he's a god, and he forces everyone to worship him. And the Roman soldiers brand Domitian's image on people's hands and foreheads, you know, like a permanent tattoo, but it's not a very nice one. And they do that because they want us to worship the emperor. Now, of course, the Jews, you know who the Jews are? Well, they're exempt, because they've only ever believed in one God. And at first, us Christians, we were seen as being part of the Jewish sect, you know, we were like them. But you see, more people have become Christians because it's so true and it's so real and it's so alive that they get it, you see, and they've all become Christians. And now the emperor's got a bit scared and he's removed our Jewish status, so we actually have to worship him. I think he's just threatened by us. Well, my dad's one of the few. He refuses to worship this evil man. And now we're not allowed to buy or sell anything. We've got no money because dad can't, he's got no income. Our family hides most of the time because if we're found by these people, these soldiers, we'll be imprisoned, we could be tortured or murdered for our faith in Jesus. And we're really struggling to keep alive, but somehow it's worth it and we do manage to get by. Now, most Christians, you see, they've cooperated with this imperial cult and they've kept trading. They've compromised their faith for this sort of false security and comfort that they've always enjoyed. They're blinded by their wealth and they don't see that in submitting to this Domitian bloke, they're rejecting Jesus. They still come to the church because they want to be Christians, but you see, you can't worship both. And they're slaves to the emperor. And it makes me angry and it makes me sad at the same time. So I'm just going to go and show you the church now. Take my scarf off. Well, you arrive at this church as a letter's being read out by an important-looking person. And it begins, to the church of the angel of the church in Laodicea. Well, you know the rest because Sue read it to us very nicely before. Well, I wanted to tell you this story just to show that the choice that the Laodicean Christians had to make was very hard. You see, they either submitted to Domitian and carried on surviving under the oppressive regime, or they faced destitution, torture, and possibly death at the hands of their oppressors. And it appears that the dominant power wins in both these cases. So you either have a sort of life covered in tattoos and being treated like rubbish, or you're faced with death. Well, I believe that Jesus wanted to tell the Laodicean Christians that the dominant powers of this world will not last. He wanted them to know that empires fall. Jesus is the only true eternal power. Now, I think Jesus has that message for us today. Maybe the oppressive regimes here in the UK aren't quite as obvious, but they are present. Why are so many people needing food banks in order to survive? Why do we see homeless people in Chester more than we've ever seen before? Issues of loneliness, mental illness, and discrimination are all around us. Do we accept that? Because we think there's nothing we can do? Or do we follow the example of Jesus in exposing injustice and try to change the system? Well, this letter to the Laodicean church will have had a massive impact on those compromised Christians living in Laodicea, and I think it helped them change their ways. We know that the Roman Empire fell about 400 years after John wrote the book of Revelation. And historians say that Christianity played a big part in the fall of the Roman Empire. We also know from historical records that the Laodicean church survived way beyond Domitian's reign, and it became a Christian bishop's residence. I think the Laodicean Christians survived, and they thrived by justifying their dignity in the end. They turned back to Jesus. They turned the other cheek. They walked the extra mile and they gave their oppressors everything they owned with a smile, because that's what Jesus taught them to do. And I think it might have really annoyed the Romans. You see, Revelation is all about Jesus. Jesus, who is not afraid to dig right down and get to the truth. He uses metaphors of lukewarm water, gold refined in the fire, white clothes, eye cream. And it made sense to the people at the time. He tells them in no uncertain terms that they make him sick. And he tells them why. He says they don't realize how poor they really are because they're rich in the eyes of the world. And you know Jesus, he sees through everything. He makes it clear, though, that despite them compromising their faith, Jesus has not given up on them. In fact, he's actively waiting. He's knocking on the door, and he says, if anyone hears his voice and opens the door, he will sit and eat with them. That offer is so special because it rests on us to make the first move. Jesus respects our choices and waits. If we open the door, he will come into our lives, not just the hallway. He will sit at the table, and he will eat with us, and he will stay, and he will make himself at home. If we invite Jesus in, right, we're opening up our lives to the living God. Well, we might think we've already done that. You know, I think I've done that. But then I suspect there might be some rooms in our lives that we haven't quite let Jesus into. I like being in control. I don't like change. I worry about tomorrow. I need to be needed. I like to be liked. Maybe it's time I open those doors and allow Jesus to show me that he delights in me and he loves me for being me, and that he delights in you and he loves you just for being you. And Jesus, you see, he'll gently show us our ways if we dare to have eyes to see and ears to hear. We need to accept that we might be complicit in injustice and oppression ourselves. When we think about the way we live, where we invest and spend our money, whether we treat others who are different from us with dignity and respect, how we look after other species and care for God's creation. And yes, the truth is painful, but I think I can imagine Jesus, and kind of, he could be sitting there with his feet up on the table. And I think he'll have a large glass of actual wine, not my fake wine, and he'll see you come in, and he'll pour you a glass, a nice big one, of real wine as well. And he'll say to you, come and sit with me. Let's do this together. Amen.